Hey, gang! Welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. You can go there and you can click on the donate button and you can keep this project going. You can also go to thekosherquestion.com and or nationalbugle.com and download the Kosher-tified app. That's a great thing to do. This is Monday, and I'm here with Mark Colvett from Great Britain. Mark, welcome to the show, and I guess, what do you say when your team comes in fourth place in the World Cup?
We say, that's a lot better than usual.
Okay.
That's what we say, because usually we don't do that well, but we did. Not that it's really an English team. I mean, a huge number of those people are not ethnically English, and the real scandal of the day, well, the scandal and the amusing thing really, well, it's a scandal that leads to amusement, is that obviously France won the World Cup, and the French squad isn't French. I mean, it looked really like the superstars of the African nations, yeah. You know, a coalition of African footballing superstars that happen to live in France, but we call them French because to do anything otherwise is probably a hate crime in France. But the real telling thing, I mean, everyone was going on about how wonderful multiculturalism is because obviously, you know, they've won the World Cup with their multicultural squad. So woo, yes, go multiculturalism. But how did they celebrate their World Cup win? Well, in the only way that a multicultural society seems to be able to celebrate anything, with a huge riot in which two people died.
So, are you serious?
Yeah. I am laughing about it.
Aside from the riots that were already going on in Nantes.
Aside from the riots that were already going on in Nantes, there was riots after the World Cup. I read this from the Daily Mirror. Two France fans die as violence erupts across the country after World Cup win over Croatia. And another headline, France's World Cup celebrations are marred as Paris police turn tear gas and water cannon on fans in clashes as a million revelers fill the Champs-Élysées. So amongst their victory, and it's really funny actually because there's pictures of the crowds in Croatia, and they didn't win, but they weren't overturning cars, looting shops and rioting. They were just, you know, proud of their team. But in France, where they did win, it ended in bloodshed, two people dead, you know, dozens, maybe more, arrested, shops looted, cars overturned, people injured, and that's when they won. So can you imagine what would have happened if they hadn't have won?
Oh, wow. Well, it's a sad state of affairs.
But if people want to know more, you can all go to my Twitter. One of my tweets has had 1,700 retweets. It's doing pretty well. My other tweets are doing quite well. I've put up some video footage of the riots in Nantes. I've put up the footage of the riots going on now. I've put up the facts about people being killed in these riots. And as I said, this is when multicultural France wins something. This is when they win something. They go like this. So imagine had they lost, the whole of France might be up in flames for a week or so.
Well, that's not good. Well, I do want to address, not for the whole show, but I do want to address the meeting that just ended a little while ago between President Putin and President Trump. It was something that I had been looking forward to ever since President Trump became president. He said he wanted to improve relations with Russia. He said he thought he could get along with Putin, and why shouldn't the United States and Russia have good relations? And, of course, you had what's often called the deep state. It's the media, the largely Jewish political establishment, throw these massive roadblocks in the way of improving relations with Russia because the Jewish establishment in particular resents Vladimir Putin for having taken back to a large extent Russia from a Jewish tyranny that lasted during the 1990s. And they threw up roadblocks in the form of this whole Russia hoax and the investigation into Russian meddling. And they still talk about it. And they even asked questions about it at the press conference. And it's just, the whole thing's ludicrous. But I watched the press conference. I watched President Putin's remarks and President Trump's remarks, and then they answered questions. And it was the type of thing that I've been looking forward to. It looks like they're going to be cooperating in Syria in the right way. I mean, we've been, the United States and our allies have been on the wrong side of that, supporting ISIS. It looks like there's going to be good cooperation. President Putin mentioned that if we can get this, the Middle East, the Syria crisis under control, it's going to ease the immigration into the Europe, which we all know is that's going to be a good thing. So there's a lot that came out of this that is very hopeful. So I don't know if you had a chance to follow it at all. I mean, the press conference only ended maybe 40 minutes ago or so. Do you have any thoughts on it?
Well, I was actually in the gym, but I do have some thoughts on this, actually. And I think they will have got on very well. I think they'll have got on very well because they're both straight talking. They're both masculine. They both have very similar opinions on mass immigration, on creeping Islamification of white nations. They both have very similar opinions on feminism and on the importance of the family. And I think they will have had a lot of common ground. And I think they will have got on far better and been far more natural together than, say, Trump and Theresa May, or worse still, somebody like Trump and Emmanuel Macron, or Trump and Angela Merkel. I think they'll have got an extremely well, they'd have had a lot in common. And I think there's another big issue to all this. Really, on a global scale, there is only one military threat to America, one credible military threat to America, maybe two. But that would be Russia and maybe China, But the credible military threat to America is Russia. And I think the American deep state, I think the large arms manufacturers, I think the whole military complex in America, the military-industrial complex, should I say, in America, relies on America and Russia having a very frosty relationship. Because by playing that up, by increasing tensions, by making it look as if Russia is an actual threat to the US, it does secure huge amounts of funding, because really Russia is the only nation, the Russian Federation is the only group that has the power to really upset America's dominance on the world stage. So having those two powers as enemies is very, very profitable for a group of people. And I believe that when Trump started talking about being friendly with Russia, about thawing relations, about sort of, you know, peace, about better trade, I think that annoyed people, obviously because of the social reasons that you stated, obviously because of the interests of a certain clique. But I think also it stands to upset the industrial military complex, which makes trillions and trillions of dollars a year by essentially securing funds off the back of threats that really don't exist. And I think if Trump brought in a new era of Russian-American friendship, that would upset a lot of people, because a lot of people's wallets would be getting an awful lot thinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I tend to emphasize the role of the Jewish elite, partly because it's difficult and a lot of people avoid doing it and somebody has to do it. But, you know, you're very correct when you talk about a military-industrial complex. The industrial side of it, the weapons manufacturers, these are really big companies. You know, if you're talking about General Dynamics and Honeywell and all of these companies, these are huge companies. There is an awful lot of money. And then within the military itself, you have this, what you could call an archipelago of bases stretching throughout what over 100 countries around the world, maybe, but major ones in a bunch of countries. And it's actually a pretty nice lifestyle for at least the senior officers, where they go around and they, on each base, they can have a nice suburban, you know, a ranch style house or whatever. They have these, you know, they have little American style suburbs set up all over the place, but then they can go right off base and they're in, you know, the middle of Seoul, or they're in the middle of the mountains in Germany, or they're in somewhere interesting, and it gives them very interesting lives, and they like that. So there's certainly that aspect too. And while I do want to continue emphasizing the Jewish aspect of our problems, all our problems aren't the result of Jews. I mean, there are countries that don't have a whole lot of Jews and still have problems. But still, I do emphasize that because I think we'd have a lot easier time dealing with the other sources of our problems if we didn't have this massive gorilla on our back. I'd say monkey, but it's a gorilla-sized problem of this Zionist gorilla on our backs, you know, sapping our strength in every way. So,
well, I'll just add something to this, if you don't mind. I've also noticed that America has other ways of feeding this industrial military complex. And what I mean by that is you look at America and you look at things it does. Now, I noticed this specifically with North Korea. Now, obviously, North Korea was seen as a rogue state, seen as somewhat of a threat to world peace. But what you would tend to see happen is America would decide on some bizarre course of action, which would usually involve some form of huge display of military force right on the border with North Korea, right on the border.
Right.
Now, at that point, and these things would be called military exercises. I love that term. Military exercises is what they'd be called. So once these military exercises were taking place, that would obviously, and quite reasonably, upset those north of the border, at which point those north of the border would start moving their troops accordingly. Because if somebody's carrying out these huge military maneuvers just on your border, and they say, "Oh, don't worry. It's just a war game. It's just some tests. We're just you know, making sure all the vehicles are running properly." You're not 100% sure of that, are you? You're probably thinking to yourself, "Well, they're saying this, but they could pretty easily roll across the border and flatten us, essentially." And obviously, there's going to be some form of, at the very least, some worries north of the border. So then North Korea, seeing the US carrying out these huge military maneuvers just south of the border, they then do some maneuvering. Some maneuvering will then take place north of the border, at which point the American press, the media, and everyone will be like, "Oh my God, look at this. North Korea have reacted in this absolutely terrible way. And all we were doing was a few, you know, routine maneuvers." Now, at that point, North Korea are then played up to being the aggressor, being unreasonable. And again, it secures huge amounts of money for the industrial military complex. And really, North Korea haven't done anything particularly unreasonable. For example, if you started walking up and down at the edge of my driveway, slapping a large bat into your hand, I would be thinking, "What the hell are you playing at?" Now, you've not actually come onto my land, but you are acting in a kind of provocative way. And it really wouldn't be unreasonable for me to get out a large bat and then stand at my door shouting, "What are you doing?" Now, that would be an obvious and reasonable response to, really, your behavior. But In terms of America, every time somebody reacts like that, that's another reason to up the spending on military hardware. And the same's happened with Russia. I remember America were very, very keen to do similar sort of, what can I call it, incendiary sort of tactics or sort of wind-up maneuvers on the border. And then Russia would be like, well, there's huge amounts of troops and armor amassing on one of our borders. You know what? Maybe, just maybe, we should actually move some of our troops into position. Maybe we should point our anti-aircraft missiles in that direction, because after all, these people are performing huge maneuvers just to the south of our borders, or in this case, probably to the west of Russia's border. Now, at this point, as soon as Russian missiles are pointed in that direction, as soon as Russia starts looking in that direction, again, the American press, the media, they go into absolute overdrive. And all you hear for about a week is, Russia have just pointed their missiles towards huge amounts of American troops massing on their borders. Well, obviously they're going to do that. And at that point, again, tensions ramp up. And this is a way to secure more funding. And America has been playing this game for years. And they've not just done it with North Korea. They haven't just done it with Russia. They've also done it with Iran. And they've done it with other nations. And they will continue to do this. Because wherever there is money to be made, unscrupulous people will do unscrupulous things to secure that funding. And as far as I can see it, the American military complex has been an absolute menace, not just to the world, but to the American people and American taxes. And also, it's not just really taxes, is it? We're not just talking taxes. If it was just an issue of taxation, it'd be bad. But it's actually worse when you think about the huge amount of borrowing that takes place in America, the huge amount of money that's been secured from China, from lenders all over the world, which has plunged America into such absolutely massive debt. And for what? To feed this absolutely huge beast that the more you feed it, the more money it requires. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem, isn't it? The more swollen, the more bloated it gets, the more it needs just to sustain its current form.
And, you know, we really ought to call it the military-industrial media complex, because none of this could happen if you didn't have the media playing along with it, right? I mean,
yes,
because the media keeps telling us. It's the media is the one that tells us, oh, Russia or North Korea or Iran or fill in the blanks have taken this provocative action without going into any of the background why they were doing it. And, you know, it happens all the time. Okay, well, we are coming up on our break in just a few seconds. But we'll be back, and we've got more issues we want to talk about. I don't know if we're going to go into the World Cup anymore or Tim the Bear. Did you see Tim the Bear at all? I've been talking
about I didn't see Tim the Bear, but I know you're a big fan.
I'm a big fan. Well, maybe I'll spare our listeners. But if they're curious about Tim the Bear, go to davidduke.com and look at the show description from the Mark Collette show with David Duke on Friday, and you'll find everything you ever wanted to know about Tim the Bear, but were afraid to ask.
And I definitely recommend anything like that.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on. and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Many people write about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. My wife and I both use Extendivite and are very pleased with the results. It has helped to stabilize our blood pressure and to make both of us feel healthier. Good product and goodbye. So far, so good. I've been taking Extendivite 3 times a day, only a short while now, but already I've noticed the circulation in my hands and feet improving. They tingle. I like the idea of taking something herbal rather than pills. I take Extendivite 3 times a day every day. I think this supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Patrick Slattery and Mark Collett. I think I know I'm in the habit of pronouncing your name the French way, and you're an Englishman, and probably you're more of an Englishman now than you were a week ago after the World Cup.
I don't mind. However you want to say it, Patrick. It got to the point where it had been said that way for so long, I was not going to rock the boat.
I have a friend who I met in Chinese class, like 35, 40 years ago, whenever it was. And it took me forever to stop pronouncing. He's got an Italian last name, and I was pronouncing it the Chinese way for decades. And now I think I've moved on to maybe the Japanese way of pronouncing it. One of these ways I'll get to the Italian way or the American way.
Well, as I say, however you want to say it, everyone's heard you call me that now for how long have we been doing this now?
Am I the only one?
No, you and David Duke both do it. So it's
probably got it from me.
It's okay. Fine.
Now, you have a YouTube channel, and you also have a weekly 2-hour podcast on Wednesdays that immediately follows this show and that I'm a panelist on. And we've got, day after tomorrow, Kevin McDonald is scheduled to join the show.
Yes, indeed.
And that's something to look forward to. So what do you want to ask Kevin McDonald about?
I'm not really sure. You put me on the spot there. I think Kevin McDonald is most known, obviously, for his seminal work, The Culture of Critique. And that book's had such a huge, huge effect on... I'm not going to say the public directly, but on thinkers, on opinion formers, which is, you see, some things are meant for public consumption, like the Harry Potter books. The Harry Potter books are meant to be books that sell millions of copies and everyone reads them. Then there are other books that are written for intellectuals. They're written by intellectuals, for intellectuals and opinion formers. And I have noticed that The Culture of Critique is one of these books that has been so widely read by so many intellectuals, by so many opinion formers, by so many people, not just at the center of our movement, but across the political spectrum. And I would say Kevin MacDonald has discussed the issue of Jewish power in a very, very unique way, the psychology behind it, why that specific ethnic group acts in the way they do. And really, what I would sort of, the question I would pose to Kevin MacDonald is, when he started his work, how did he begin his journey, and what led him down the route of investigating such a topic, really? It's just, I like on my show to explore not just ideas, but the story behind those ideas and how people got to where they are.
And he's one of these people who started in a very different place. At least according to his Wikipedia page, he went off in maybe the 1970s off to Jamaica and was playing jazz piano. And he often talks about having gone to the University of Wisconsin as, you know, an undergraduate student, and he was a liberal there. It's a pretty good school, and there were a lot of New York Jews there who were very active and, you know, very active in a lot of the movements, and there was just a difference. But from what I recall, he started writing. He wrote the first book, and he wanted to test out theories of group evolutionary strategy. And there was, you know, a few different groups he could pick. He could have picked the Amish or some other groups that have this very well-defined history, and you know, there's a lot of material out there. He picked the Jews, and his first book on the Jews, it wasn't particularly alarmist or hostile. It wasn't particularly critical. But the second book, more so, and then by the third book, it's like it's as if the process of writing these books red-pilled him. And so by the third book, he was talking about these specific Jewish intellectual movements, and then also had a chapter on immigration, which I think that chapter on immigration is really classic, because it just shows that the immigration changes to the immigration law simply would not have happened without these Jewish intellectual movements. Okay, are we coming up on the break? We'll be back.
Are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to aroutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited. So take a breath, head to aroutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at aroutfitting.com.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Welcome back to National Bugle Radio. You know, Mark, so we've just had, what is it, 5 or 6 weeks of World Cup soccer. And England did well. They got to, you know, they were playing up until Saturday, right? And so I'm sure it was a big deal there. And I know that you made a video some time ago about, what was it, the Football Lads March or something like that?
And Football Lads Alliance, yes.
Football Lads Alliance. And, you know, there can be political or nationalistic or ethnic overtones to football in Great Britain. And I was wondering, I know on our shows, it's a major point of discussion, you know, all the diversity that you see in football or in the sports, which, you know, it precedes to an extent the diversity we see in our society, but you know, it's like the canary in the coal mine, maybe. How much discussion in Britain, for instance, has the World Cup provoked when you see teams marching out under the flag of England or France or Belgium, and they're full of Africans or, you know, other non-native people?
That's a very interesting question, because football has traditionally been supported or watched, should I say, by a very working class sort of audience. And that working class audience has always been quite patriotic, quite nationalistic, and historically very anti-immigration. That group has always been, at best, skeptical of immigration, and at worst, or should I say, at worst, skeptical of immigration, and at best, completely opposed to it. And historically, many nationalist movements in the UK used to recruit at football grounds, because football grounds were very, very much a hotbed of sort of white working class young men who had nationalistic desires. And over the last sort of 20 or so years, football has run numerous, or the Football Association here in the UK, the FA, have run numerous anti-racism initiatives and have done everything they can to make football very, very multicultural, very, very tolerant. It's obviously become very diverse in terms of the players, because players come here from all over the world to play football. And there's obviously a large number of English-born immigrants who play for teams here and play for the national team. But there has been a concerted effort by the Football Association, who have worked with numerous of these anti-racist groups in order to try and combat any form of patriotism or nationalistic fervour from the crowds. And these groups even monitor and report on the songs supporters sing, the things they do in the stands. And there is a concerted effort to ban people from grounds who say the wrong things, who espouse the wrong points of view, or who sing the wrong chants. And they've done this really to almost try and reprogram the white working class here in England. And now they use football very much as a weapon against nationalism, very much as a weapon against patriotism, because they try and tie in England's success with multiculturalism. They'll say, look here. And there were several of these posters doing the rounds at the time of the football. They had a picture of the England squad, and they were saying, this is the best England have done in years. We should all be celebrating this. But we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for immigration. And they'd show a poster with people of immigrant background removed from that poster, people who are playing for England but have their parents came from overseas, or maybe even they came from overseas originally but are now English nationals and play for the England team. And they were removed from that poster, saying, imagine how it would be if those players weren't there. Imagine how terrible things would be. We probably wouldn't be in the semi-final. Well, these sort of notions are kind of silly. Well, they are silly, because what you're essentially saying, and this is the long and short of it, is you're saying that there are two great reasons for multiculturalism. One, there are players in the England team that aren't ethnically English, and England are doing great, so essentially that's a great reason for multiculturalism. And the other reason is, after you've watched a match, you want to go for a kebab or a curry with your mates. And that's another great reason for multiculturalism. So here in England, there are two reasons that multiculturalism is fantastic. And that's food and football. Food and football. So if you want to put it in a more historical way, bread and circuses. That's what immigration is. It's bread and circuses. It's takeaway food after you've watched the football. And they're doing much the same in France. I've seen people who are committed multiculturalists turning around now and saying, well, you know, people who were saying that France was ruined because of multiculturalism, well, what would you do if Marine Le Pen had got in and all these immigrants weren't here? Would we have won the World Cup? Well, you may have won the World Cup. You may not have won the World Cup. But you probably wouldn't have the 4 or 5 days of race riots either. And you wouldn't have the terrorist atrocities. And you wouldn't have the sexual assaults and the rapes. And you wouldn't have the fact that your nation is being transformed. You wouldn't have the demographic problems. You wouldn't have the issues of ghettos that white people or police officers can't even go into because they are now ruled by people who don't tolerate our kind in their areas. But all of that should be forgotten because we lifted the World Cup. Aren't things fantastic? And that's why I drew attention at the beginning of the show to these riots that have followed the World Cup victory. Because even when these multicultural nations manage to do something that they're so eager to pin on multiculturalism, isn't it funny that that in itself, even though it should be a victory, something people should be celebrating, it's followed by riotous behavior. It's followed by death.
Yeah. You know, of course, if none of the countries had multiculturalism, England might still be doing very well. You'd have a team of actual Englishmen playing a team of actual Swedes and of actual Frenchmen and actual Belgians. And Africans could play for African teams. And I remember in 1986, 1990, the team from Cameroon, the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon, led by Oman Beek. And they did quite well, and it was fun watching them. It was fun watching Africans playing for an African team. But to watch all the countries being multicultural with the same mix, it's like watching... on professional teams, when players are changed every year, they traded every year. How can you develop any kind of loyalty? And that's almost what this is like. I don't know, but of course, the main thing isn't the sport; it's what it represents and what it's a sign of, and it's a sign of not just our players being replaced, but our people being replaced. And it's but the kind of the part of the reason I brought it up was there are people who are in situations where they're largely shielded from at least the adverse impacts of immigration. And the World Cup isn't exactly the adverse impact of immigration, but it does just show how far it's gone, especially when you see that France team, which I counted, what was it? Did they have 7 or 8 starters who were African?
I'm just looking that now. I believe it was about, I think it was 7.
7 out of 11. So, in the United States, you've got football and basketball that are majority African American. Of course, Americans are Americans. They're not recent immigrants for the most part. But at the same time, you have in the NFL the African American players, the black players, starting to do this crazy stuff where they won't stand for the flag. And so, not that I would have never cared about something like this years ago, but why would a player who has, for most of them, the only valuable skill they have is being able to play a ball game, and the only reason that ball game can fetch them millions of dollars is because people like it. People enjoy watching it. And they enjoy watching it partly because it's just been marketed better than, say, handball has been, because handball would be fun to watch too if you understood it. And then they destroy the game's possibilities. They're basically killing the goose that lays the golden egg, because there's nothing inherently better about these sports than about, than all sorts of other sports. But also just the fact that it's a complete lack of appreciation for a society that is offering them riches beyond imagination, and then they turn around and insult it. And I don't know. That's I mean, is there, has there been anything like that among players, say football players in Britain, non-white football players, where they're showing, you know, their opposition to racism or something like that? Has this been a thing over there?
Well, I think the first thing I want to respond to about what you were saying is it's very interesting that they are trying to tie national pride, all our national pride, to really something as frivolous as football. And secondly, they're using that to say, look, national pride is linked to migrants, it's linked to immigration, it's linked to people who aren't of European descent. And I think that's a very important thing to note. But it's a very insidious thing to do that, because not only are they linking national pride with immigration, with immigrants, with people who aren't of European descent, but they're also moving national pride towards something that doesn't really matter. Now, I enjoy watching a good game of football, but in the grand scheme of things, football isn't the be-all and end-all. Football isn't something that is going to reshape our world. It isn't something that's fundamentally shaped our world. And I tend to see things like this as very, very damaging, because things we used to have national pride in were things such as our artistic achievements, our military achievements, our standard of living, our architectural achievements. You would have national pride in the fact that you would walk around the city and you would see statues of those who created that city, who were influential in advancing Western civilization, not just your area or your nation, but the whole of Western civilization. But unfortunately, that's kind of gone now. And instead of having pride in things that matter, we have pride in things that are really quite frivolous, really quite meaningless, really quite pointless. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what team won whatever game of sports ball is currently being played. Mm-hmm. In a civilizational, from a civilizational perspective, it doesn't really matter. It's all kind of nonsense. As I said earlier, it's bread and circuses, and the immigrants seem to have both of those things covered now. They're great at sports ball, and they're great at cooking us the takeaways we eat after we've watched whichever game of sports ball we've currently been viewing. And this is kind of a great way to encapsulate the demise of Western civilization, isn't it? That now our children, our youngsters, they're going to say, when people say, what's the greatest thing? You know, what's the greatest thing about England? Well, we came fourth in the World Cup and most of the team or half of the team aren't white. You know, isn't that wonderful? They're not saying, well, I think the greatest thing about England was when Admiral Nelson gave his life for the nation at the Battle of Trafalgar. That act of selflessness, that act of bravery, of heroism, was something that really encapsulated the English spirit. They're not going to say that. They're going to say, oh, well, you know, wasn't it great when Raheem Sterling played that pass to Dele Alli? Wasn't that wonderful? Well, you know, football's all well and good for a bit of relaxation, but once we start putting these games above bigger issues in our society, and the big issue at the moment actually is immigration, and not the positives that it brings, but the negatives, the terrorism, the grooming, the unemployment, the overcrowding. But instead, we're too busy with the bread and circuses. Mm-hmm. And isn't it funny now that the very things that are keeping us occupied, or keeping our people preoccupied so they're not looking at the problems, are now things that are being used to brainwash our people? And it's all very insidious, but it's all very carefully calculated, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I'd grown up rooting for losing sports teams. And I remember the first year my team won the championship. And I've been watching all year, and they went to the playoffs. They won the championship. And I was jumping up and down for a few seconds, and then it's like, okay, now what? I mean, what has this changed? Okay, we'll be back after the break with more from Mark Collett.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network.
Back to National Radio with Patrick Slatter and Mark Collett. And so you have a YouTube channel, and every Friday you're putting out a great video, and they're well researched and well done, and they're not too long. They're digestible, so 15 minutes maybe on average. And your latest one, Feminism, A Cancer on the West. What is feminism all about? I was able to live most of my life, I thought, ignoring feminism. I was probably deeply impacted and scarred by it without knowing it, without realizing it. But what's feminism all about?
Well, you'll have to watch my video to find out. I can't give you 15 minutes of information in three. That'd be impossible, Patrick.
Yeah.
To give you a brief overview, feminism has always been billed, really, as the equality of the sexes. It's another one of these things that sounds quite benign. It sounds quite harmless. You know, it's just equality. It's just equality. That's all it is. It's equality. But it's not really equality. It's not It's very much like communism. Communism was billed as equality, but it's not. Communism's really an ideology of hatred, and so is feminism. Feminism's an ideology of hatred, not just hate for men either, but hatred for the natural, motherly, and feminine female. And it's an ideology that attempts to create this conflict between the sexes, because I talk a lot about demographics, about the problem of the reduced white birth rate and also obviously the floods of migrants coming here. But feminism is one of the driving forces behind the reduced white birth rate. It's a driving force behind families not forming, men and women not coming together as pairs, and also, of course, women looking at careers, looking at remaining childless for much, much longer. Because women now don't see motherhood as a positive. They see it as a negative. And feminists have been very, very good at telling women that there is something better out there, that there is something more fulfilling, that there is something that will give them a higher level of happiness and well-being. And that is a career. And obviously, because of that, women don't want children. And if they do have children, they want fewer children. And because of this, we are facing this huge demographic shift. But the very interesting thing about all of this is, as feminism has become more widespread, as more and more women have entered the workplace, women's happiness has actually fallen. And since the 1970s, you've actually seen a sharp decline in women's happiness. You've seen more women saying they are unhappy. More women have said that they don't feel fulfilled. And in fact, women's happiness used to be much higher than men's happiness. But now women's happiness is much lower than men's happiness, because men are still largely doing what makes them happy, what they were meant to do, which is to be a provider, which is to be a breadwinner. But women aren't doing what makes them happy, which is to be a mother and a homemaker. And because of this, a lot of women, and I've provided all the evidence for this in the podcast, women are now saying, God, I hit 50 and I did everything I was told. I had a career, I earned lots of money, I went on these wonderful holidays, I bought everything I desired, but I was never happy. And now it's too late because I haven't had children, and I feel that I have this longing desire for something I can now never do. And really, feminism hasn't just been an awful plague on men and masculinity, but it's also been a plague on the Western female, because they've robbed so many women of achieving their ultimate natural desire, which is, of course, a husband and children.
That's right. And, you know, you're going to be having Kevin MacDonald on the show, and I'm sure he would have a lot to say about it. When you think in evolutionary terms, women who didn't have the instinct to become mothers wouldn't be passing on their genes. The fact that women are still around means that they've wanted to be mothers throughout history. Well, thank you, Mark, for being on the show again.
Thank you for having me, and I'll see you next Monday.
See you next Monday. And I'll be back again tomorrow talking about the summit and more exciting episodes of National Duke Radio.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.